Hello, everyone. I'd just like to welcome everyone to another episode of Mr. Speaker Speak. You know, it's going to be a great show, like always. Podcast that informs, challenges, and it inspires real talk, real people about real things. And even though the show is entitled Mr. Speaker Speaks, it's the show where the guests really get to speak, and I get to speak to them by asking them questions. So I'm so glad you're here with me today and joining me and my guest, Dr. Ronnie. And we're going to be talking about the eyes. You know, when you first meet someone, you look into their eyes. And so we're going to find out a lot about the eyes on today. But like always, here on Mr. Speaker Speaks, we like to go in prayer very briefly. Father, we truly thank you for another day, another opportunity to come and to share information that can be beneficial and to help people. And so now I just ask that your presence be here as we discuss the eyes, a very important part of the body. And so God, just open up this conversation. Let it be very, very informative for my listening audience that they can walk away with things that they can do to help them keep their eyesight until they leave this earth. And God, I just say thank you for my guest, and I ask that you bless her upcoming conference. Be with her. Make it the best conference ever. And I give you all the praise and all the glory in Jesus' name. Amen. My passage of scripture that I'd like to open up with today is from Matthew chapter 6, verse 22. And it reads, "The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light." Matthew chapter 6, verse 22. And before I introduce my guest, she is world renowned. She's an expert in her field. I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank one of our sponsors, Sirius Web Solutions. If you need any website development, graphic design, e-marketing strategies, please give them a call at 850-597-1707. And they're on the web at SiriusWebSolutions.com. And Sirius is spelled S-I-R-I-U-S, WebSolutions.com. When you give them a call, just let them know that you heard about it from Mr. Speaker. Also, if you like to be inspired and you want motivation, I ask that you please join my exclusive community to receive inspirational and motivational texts and links to content that can help you pivot into your purpose with power and precision. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can go ahead and scan the QR code and it'll take you there. However, if you're listening to the audio only version, all you have to do is text the word INSPIRE. That's INSPIRE, the word INSPIRE, to 850-290-0066. That's 850-290-0066. And you will get inspiration and motivation directly to your phone to help inspire you. But my guest today, I just want to tell you a little bit about her before I ask her the all-important introductory question. Dr. Ronnie is a board-certified ophthalmologist specializing in an integrative approach to vision health and author of Beyond Carrots, Best Foods for Eye Health A to Z, and Dr. Ronnie's Visionary Kitchen. She is also a fellowship-trained neuro-ophthalmologist. She is the founder of Envision Health NYC, a concierge practice specializing in eye health, neurological conditions, and migraine headaches. Ooh, very familiar with that last one, migraine headaches. She is associate professor of ophthalmology at Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai and co-director of the Neuro-Ophthalmology Service. And I'm going to stop right there, and I'm just going to ask her my preliminary question. What else is there you want the listening audience to know about you, Dr. Ronnie?
Well, I do a lot of different things, but one thing I absolutely love to do is to teach. And I just love sharing information and empowering people. So at the hospital. I teach residents, medical students, fellows. I teach my patients. And this is really why I do what I do, because I just love to empower people with knowledge that helps them lead better and healthier lives.
Oh, excellent. So my introductory question to you, because we're talking about the eyes today, when you think about all of the quotes, what is your best quote relative to the eyes?
Ah, well, I have something ready for you, Mr. Speaker. I actually didn't know what this question would be. So, but I know exactly how I'm going to answer this. So when it comes to vision, I would say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And that's a phrase that was said centuries ago by Benjamin Franklin. And he was talking about fighting fires. But when it comes to eye health, the eye is just so delicate. And if it sustains damage, it's very difficult for vision to be restored. So why not prevent it before it happens? That's really what I strive to imbue in my patients, in my, again, my teachings. And that's why I'm doing the summit, because I really want people to realize that it's better to be proactive and prevent it from happening than to chase it after it begins. It can be quite difficult.
Yes, it can. And, you know, a lot of times when people think of quotes, they often quote the one, oh, the eyes are a window to the soul. And I really like that. One of the ones that I came across is that I like is the eyes see only what the mind is prepared to comprehend. I kind of like that one. And so the eyes, how important are the eyes to living in today's world?
Yeah, well, if you think about what you do in your daily life, so think about the five things you love to do, whether it's reading, whether it's using your phone, whether it's driving, being out in nature. Maybe you love to work in the kitchen, or you love doing some kind of handicraft or arts and crafts. You're using your vision. And so it's really essential for the vast majority of our daily tasks. And imagine what life would be like if you couldn't do those things, if you couldn't read properly because your vision's too blurry, or maybe you're missing part of your vision. If you can't drive, if you can't work, your life would look, pun intended, look very different. And so, you were saying, Mr. Speaker, earlier about the quote, I believe the eye sees only what the mind can see. I'm going to elaborate on that just a little bit also, because many people don't realize that we actually don't see with our eyes. We see with our brains. Our eyes simply, and I shouldn't say simply because it's not so simple, but our eyes take in information and then transmit that information through the optic nerve to the brain, where our vision center is. And so in order to have good eyesight, you need to have good brain health and mindset. And all of that plays into our vision. So we don't just see with our eyes. It's really a combination. It's a complex system that allows us to enjoy this gift of vision.
Wow, that is great news. And, you know, I'm closer to 60 now than I am 50. And so when
I'm not so far behind you, Mr. Speaker. I'm right behind you there.
we just think about, you know, as I get older, I'm going to, you know, just automatically begin to lose eyesight. Is it something really that just happens as we age, or can anyone develop vision problems at any part of their life?
Yeah, so both are true. The truth is, yes, anyone can develop a vision problem, even babies. I definitely see babies in my practice where they have some type of vision issue. But also, as we get older, we're more prone to certain things happening. And I want to reassure you, Mr. Speaker, that as we all get older, it is a blessing that we're able to, you know, enjoy the years in our lives, especially in our later years. But it doesn't necessarily mean that one will lose vision. Yes, there are things that happen. There are age-related changes in our eyes that happen. But it doesn't necessarily mean that vision loss, or even blindness, God forbid blindness, but that is our destiny. There are many amazing technologies and treatments now for eye disease, or I shouldn't even say disease, but age-related eye changes that can turn things around, that can reverse vision changes, that can restore vision. So we're very fortunate to live in a world today where, yes, we do get older. Yes, certain things happen. Like the most common thing is trouble reading up close. And most people by the time probably they're in their mid-40s, definitely by their 50s, notice that, oh, I have to hold things a little bit further away to see clearly. That's something that happens to all of us as we get older. But luckily, there are some wonderful solutions. And cataracts. Cataracts also happen to just about everyone. And I tell people, again, if you're fortunate to live long enough, you will have a cataract. Doesn't mean you have to do something about it right away. But yes, it's a natural part of aging. Just like we get gray hairs and we get wrinkles, it's part of getting older.
So what exactly is a cataract?
Yeah, so for this, I'm going to actually pull out my handy dandy eye model here. And I'm so glad that we're on video because I can show you all a little sneak peek, a little glimpse into the eye. So when you look at someone's eye, you probably just see the very front part of the eye, the white part, the colored part inside. But let me open this up and show you all that's going on inside the eye. So the eye is really, really complex. It's a small organ, about the size of a golf ball, but it's got so much going on. And we actually have inside of our eye, we have 40 different parts that work together in concert to help us to see. And there are 200 cell types. So again, really complex. But when you're talking about cataracts, let me show you what a cataract is. So when light comes into the eye, it has to go through a few structures before it hits the back of the eye, the retina, before it gets the messages get sent to the brain. First, the first structure that light goes through is the cornea, which is this dome-shaped tissue right here. Next, it goes through the pupil, which is the opening in your iris, the colored part of the eye. Now, in this eye, it's kind of hazel, but you may have brown eyes or blue eyes or green eyes or hazel eyes. And then it goes through the lens. And this lens is our natural lens inside the eye, just like glasses, but it helps us to focus. And when we're younger, this lens is crystal clear. Imagine looking through a clear window. That's what the lens is when we're younger. As we get older, it starts to age a little bit, and you can call it like almost like rusting a little bit, like biologic rusting. So there are changes that happen in the lens. The scientific name for that rusting is oxidative stress, but the lens starts to get yellow. And when the lens gets yellow, that's what we call a cataract. And as we get older, it gets a little bit more opaque and more opaque and more opaque. And imagine if this isn't clear anymore and it's sitting right here and the light's trying to get in, it's not going to be able to be clearly focused onto the back of the retina. It's going to be hazy. It's going to be blurry. And that's what a cataract is. And we all develop them. Most people, by the time they're in their mid to late 50s, definitely by their early 60s, they have some degree of cataract. And again, it's like looking through a dirty window. Things are hazy. Things are a little bit dull. Colors are a little faded or washed out. That's what a cataract does. But just because you have a cataract doesn't mean you have to do anything about it. It's only if, you know, I was saying earlier, think about the five things you love to do every day that you have to use your vision for. If you can't do those things because your vision's too blurry because of the cataract, then maybe it's time to get some cataract surgery. But otherwise, most cataracts are benign. They can last. They can stay for years before it gets to the point where you may have to do something about them.
And when you talk about do something about them, do they go in, and I'm just being funny, like with Windex and spray it on there and clean the window, or do they put in a new lens? How is that corrected?
Yeah, I wish it were that easy. I wish we could just take like a wipe and then just clean it off. But unfortunately, the entire lens is opaque. And so you basically have to replace the window. And so what we do is we go in through the front part of the eye. We go in through the cornea. It is surgery. We make a tiny, tiny, tiny little incision that's about less than 3 millimeters long. So think about how small a millimeter is. Like 2.4 millimeters is the usual incision size. We go in through the side here. I don't know if you can see this, but we go in through the side here. We go in with our instruments. we break up the cataract into little pieces using different energy. We call it ultrasound energy to break it up. And then we remove it. And then we have to put an implant in its place. So that is cataract surgery in a nutshell. It's very common. It's probably the most common type of surgery that's done around the world, especially elective surgery. And most people have an excellent result after cataract surgery. And as long as the rest of the eye is healthy, people can expect to get back their vision. You know, when they're back in their 20s or 30s, they can expect to get back that hopefully perfect 20/20 vision that they used to enjoy. So it's totally reversible when the time is right.
And speaking of other things that affect people's eyes, you know, I am extremely nearsighted, and I know some people are farsighted, and then we hear things like astigmatism. Explain all of that. What is that?
Sure. So I'm going to bring on my eye model again and put it back together and show you what all those terms mean. So basically, let's see if I can do this here real quickly, put it all back together. So when light comes into the back of the eye, it has to go through these structures, and then it gets focused onto, see this yellow circle right here. That's the center of our retina, and that's responsible for our 20/20 vision. So the light is supposed to be focused right onto the back of the eye. Now, this whole optical system in the front of the eye, sometimes it's able to focus the light properly, in which case people wouldn't need glasses. Their vision is great. They see very, very well. But sometimes when the optical system is too strong, the light focuses, instead of focusing here, it focuses in front of the retina. And that's what we call myopia or nearsightedness, which is, Mr. Speaker, what you were saying that you have. So your optical system is a little bit too strong, or in some people, their eye is too long. So instead of the light focusing where it's supposed to be, if the eye is too long, it's going to focus in front of the retina. Now, the opposite is true for farsighted people. So instead of the eye's focusing system focusing right here, the lens system and the lens and cornea allows the light to focus back here. And so the eye is almost too short. And so in that situation, people can see far and near, but they have to strain more. And kids can kind of manage by just cranking in some power and straining more to get the light to focus here. But eventually they will probably need glasses or reading glasses, etc. Now, what's astigmatism? It sounds like a scary thing, doesn't it? Astigmatism. It sounds like, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? But it's really really not that. And it's totally correctable. So what astigmatism is the vast majority of people who have astigmatism, their cornea, instead of being perfectly spherical, is a little bit more oval-shaped or oblong. And you can think of it like, I know, a basketball versus a football. So if it's shaped more like a football than a basketball, then the light beams don't focus in a single point. They end up, oh, I just lost my cornea there, but they end up focusing in two points. So if they focus in two points, things are blurry. But we can correct it with either glasses or contacts to get those beams of light to focus on one point. So it is correctable. Again, the vast majority of astigmatism comes from the cornea. Sometimes the lens can contribute a little bit of astigmatism. So if you have a lot of astigmatism that's coming from your lens, and your eye doctor can do some tests in the office to see where it's coming from. But if you have cataract surgery and the lens is removed, your astigmatism is gone. So sometimes it can fix the astigmatism if it's mainly coming from the lens.
Thank you so very much. And here's another interesting question. What is the difference between an optometrist and an ophthalmologist? And then we want to throw in neuro-ophthalmology. And I have some questions relative to that, because I'm aware of someone who had some pressure inside of their head, which was causing some vision issues. And they were talking about maybe putting something inside to drain fluid.
Yes.
So I'd like you to talk about what is that condition and give us a little bit more.
Sure. So I'll answer your first questions real quick, and then we'll talk about that, because that condition is something I see every week in my practice. Every week, I see at least a handful of patients come in with that problem. But first, what's the difference between the two types of eye doctors? Both of them are doctors. ophthalmologists go to medical school. They have MDs. So we spend, I'm an ophthalmologist. We spend 4 years in college, 4 years in medical school, and then 4 years in internship followed by residency. So that's 12 years. And then beyond that, if you do a fellowship in a particular area, whether it be glaucoma or cornea or retina or neuro-ophthalmology, that's another year or two tacked onto that. So the training is medical and surgical. And yes, we can prescribe glasses, but basically we diagnose diseases of the eye and we treat diseases of the eye. Optometrists are also eye doctors. They go to college for 4 years and they go to optometry school for 4 years. And many of them start practicing after that. So that's 8 years of training. And some people do a residency for a year or two. And optometrists are what we consider the primary care eye doctors in most communities. Patients go to them when they need glasses. If they have some, you know, basic eye issues, they go see their optometrist. But if it's something more complicated, something that may require medications, perhaps even a surgery, a procedure, then your optometrist would refer you to your ophthalmologist. And many times we work together to help manage patients. So I have many optometry colleagues that I refer to and they refer to me, and we co-manage our patients. We work together. Now, what's a neuro-ophthalmologist? Well, as it implies, neuro has to do with the brain. So I was saying earlier that we don't see with our eyes, we see with our brains. Much of the brain is dedicated to our visual system, and that's what a neuro-ophthalmologist helps to manage. So we take care of patients with brain problems or neurologic problems that also have vision problems. For example, people with strokes, who have vision loss, we help to manage. People with brain tumors and vision issues, people with double vision or loss of vision because of an optic nerve problem. So there are many, many different types of conditions that we take care of, including migraine, which I know, Mr. Speaker, you mentioned that you're a migraine sufferer, and myself included. I also have migraine. And we can talk for hours and hours and hours about that because that's one of my favorite topics. But in terms of the condition you mentioned about, you know, this high pressure in the brain. So this is it's a condition that we're learning a lot more about, and more people are getting diagnosed. And it tends to happen. Now, this is really interesting. I'm not sure that, you know, the person you know who has this, you know, what their demographics are. It tends to happen to women, and women who are usually on the younger end of things. So between the ages, let's say, of 20 to 50 or 55. And this is also really interesting. We don't know why, but women who have recently gained weight or overweight. So women who are on the younger side and women who've gained weight recently are kind of, for some reason, the risk factors for having high pressure in the brain. And people can have headaches. That's usually the most common symptom, but they can get blurry vision because that high pressure in the brain gets transmitted to the eye, and it gets transmitted to the optic nerve, and the optic nerve swells up. And we can actually see that. So that, going back to my eye model here, this is the retina, and this structure here, you know, you can see it's yellow, it's kind of cut off. This is the optic nerve. And this is what connects the eye to the brain. And so the nerve over here can get very, very swollen when there's high pressure in the brain. And when somebody has this, we can look in the back of the eye, we can examine them, we can take photos, we can see the swelling. That's a tip off that something's going on in the brain. We do need to do some urgent testing to make sure that they don't have a brain tumor, which in the vast majority of cases, no, there's no brain tumor there. But then we do additional tests to find out, okay, what's the diagnosis? We confirm the diagnosis, and then we start treatment. And the key is, if you suspect you may have something like this, if you have blurry vision, if you have a lot of headaches, if you fall into that demographic, definitely, definitely, definitely go see an eye doctor. Go see either an optometrist or ophthalmologist. They can do the screening. If you have swelling of the nerve, then they'll send you to somebody like me, a neuro-ophthalmologist, to get the further testing done and to get the diagnosis and then get treatment. So that's a long answer to your question, but sorry about that.
Is there a name for that condition, or is it just?
Yes.
Okay.
So it has a long name, but I'll give you the short version of it as well. It's called idiopathic intracranial hypertension. So idiopathic basically means we don't really know what causes it. Intracranial means in the brain, in the head. And hypertension is high pressure. So many people are familiar with hypertension, you know, high blood pressure, but we can also have high brain pressure. And this is what this is. This is high pressure in the fluid of the brain. Again, we don't understand what causes this. We don't know why this particular subset of the population is more prone to it. But we know that if we diagnose it early, if we treat it early with medications, and by the way, weight loss is part of the treatment. So we know that weight gain is a risk, but when people lose weight, this actually goes into remission. People can have this completely go away if they lose some weight. A little bit of weight can make this go into remission. So that's it in a nutshell. Again, it's called IIH for short, idiopathic intracranial hypertension.
I am loving this, but before we get so much, get deeper into eye conditions, because I want to talk about some of the preventative things in your book. What I want to talk about really, really quickly and let your upcoming conference, talk to us about that so my listening audience will know what's going on here.
Sure. So I wanted to bring this type of education to more people. You know, when I see patients one-on-one in the office, I can only help them, you know, again, one-on-one, but I wanted to allow thousands and thousands and thousands of people to learn these concepts and empower themselves. So I put together this summit. It's called the Eye Health Summit. It's the first of its kind. And it's not just me, but I've invited 35 other eye care experts. You can see here that there's a diversity of different backgrounds, different topics. And we're spreading this out over eight days now, because we had to add a few speakers. So initially it was 7 days. Now it's 8 days. We have about 4 to 5 talks, interviews with them released every day, and people can tune in and they can learn. And each interview is about 30 to 35 minutes in length. And the summit is completely free to join. You can go to our website, theeyehealthsummit.com, and register. And please, if you're registering, please invite your friends and family members to join now. Also, especially if they are concerned about their eyes and their vision. And really, it's the purpose is to spread this information and help people protect and preserve their vision. Because our vision is really, it's a priceless gift, right? It's a gift from God. We need to protect it. We need to support it. And there's so much we can do. So in the summit, we talk about nutrition. We talk about lifestyle choices. We talk about screen time. We talk about stress and supplements and, you know, just getting outdoors and enjoying nature. Like, all of those things can help support our vision.
Thank you so very much. Let's talk a little bit about your book, Dr. Ronnie's Visionary Kitchen and Beyond Carrots. Let's talk about those real quickly, because, you know, growing up, we always heard, you know, you eat carrots and it's good for your vision. And I think of Bugs Bunny eating the carrots. What's up, Doc? You know, he's always eating carrots. So talk to us. Do foods really play an important role in our eye care?
100%. And I would say even more than our genetics. Genetics do play a role. So for example, if you have a parent with an eye issue or a grandparent, if let's say it's glaucoma or macular degeneration, you know that you're more at risk. But we know that people can prevent vision loss and blindness by including certain types of foods in their diets. So I'll give you a couple of examples. The Mediterranean diet, many people have heard of it. You know, people have kind of equated that with heart health. Like, it's really good for your heart to have a Mediterranean style diet. Well, we also know that a Mediterranean diet is great for vision, and it can help reduce the risk of macular degeneration and vision loss by 47%. So almost 50% decrease in the risk of losing vision by simply incorporating more of a Mediterranean style diet. And so we also know on the flip side that there are certain foods that can increase the risk of one's vision going downhill. Foods that I like to call sad foods, which you've probably heard of before, but standard American diet type foods that are processed, rich in high sugars, like simple sugars or added sugars, and also that are, you know, made with unhealthy fats, like deep fried, et cetera. I know that some of us really love those types of foods. You know, it really, it suits our palate. It makes us happy. It's absolutely true, but try to just decrease your intake of those foods and try to increase your intake of more fresh fruits and vegetables. Like leafy greens are great for eye health. Spinach, kale, arugula, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower. These are great foods to include in your diet. Plus berries. I am a huge fan of berries to include in one's diet. There's actually research shown that if you have berries, this is really interesting. I think you'll find this interesting, Mr. Speaker. If you have half a cup of blueberries a day, just half a cup a day, you can reduce your risk of cognitive decline and dementia. Half a cup a day. Incredible. And we also know that berries can help with glaucoma, or at least berry extracts can help with glaucoma. So there are so many different foods. And I talk about these in my book, Beyond Carrots, not just carrots. Yes, we need to have carrots. They're important. But if you just eat a ton of carrots a day, you will not have, you're not guaranteed perfect vision. You need to have that diversity of different foods, particularly the very colorful types of foods. So try to have lots of color and eat the rainbow. I love saying that, eat the rainbow when you're choosing your produce.
Okay. We live in a digital world. Everything now is, even like now, the podcast is going to be online. We are tied to screens all day long. And then I think I read somewhere that we look at our screens so many hours a day, upwards of 6 to 7 hours a day. We're looking at this. How does this being in this digital world and all of these screens affect our vision?
That's a great question. I know a lot of people, I mean, I think you said 6 hours a day. I think many people spend a lot more, including myself. Some people spend 7 to 9 or even 10 plus hours a day on screens for work and school and binging their favorite TV shows. So we're just glued to our screens. But the good news is there is no evidence of permanent damage done to your eyes from being on screens, which is a good thing, right? If that were true, you know, if screens really did any damage, we would have an epidemic of blindness right now, and we don't, luckily. But what I can tell you is that all this screen time can have some short-term side effects. And this is called, in the eye care world, we call this digital eye strain. And what that is, it's not just one symptom. It's like a constellation of symptoms. So blurry vision, dry eyes, trouble focusing. Sometimes people have light sensitivity. It can even trigger headaches or even migraine. And also neck and shoulder issues, because most of the time we're kind of hunched over and with our neck kind of flexed down. So all of that is called digital eye strain. But luckily, there are some really simple things you can do to manage it and prevent it from happening. One of the simplest things you can do is just to blink more. And, you know, many people don't really think about blinking because it's automatic. It's kind of like breathing. We don't think about it. But the more we blink, especially when we're on screens, the more we can spread our tears over our eyes and lubricate our eyes and prevent dry eye as well as eye strain. So I'll ask you this. Here's a question for you, Mr. Speaker. When it comes to blinking, how many times do you think we blink per minute, like a normal average person?
On average, I would say about 150.
Per minute?
Per minute? Oh, I thought, oh, per minute?
Per minute.
I'll say about 65.
Okay. Well, it's a little bit less than that. So 15 to 20 is...
I was close.
You were close. Yes. Yeah, you were close. Better than 150. 150 maybe if you think about like an hour or more than that. But about 15 to 20 times a minute, we're blinking. And again, that helps to lubricate our eyes. We're spreading the tears. But when we're on screens, we only blink 3 to 5 times a minute. 3 to 5 times. So what happens is we're so intently looking at the screen, our brains forget to tell us to blink and our eyes dry out. So simply by blinking more, you can lubricate your eyes and refresh them. It's kind of like, you know, the windshield wiper of a car. Like when it gets a little bit hazy outside and precipitation, you need to just spread it and then you'll have some clarity again. So blink more mindfully and sometimes even more forcefully. So, you know, maybe do some harder squeezes when you're feeling like your eyes are getting tired and dry. The other thing is to use the 20-20-20 rule, which basically means every 20 minutes, look at something for 20 seconds far in the distance, about 20 feet away. So don't look at your screen, look at something in the distance. So 20 minutes, look away for 20 seconds, look at something in the distance 20 feet away. And what that does is it helps to relax your eye muscles. And because when we're looking at our screens, we're constantly focusing. That lens in our eye has to constantly strain to focus up close. And by just doing the 20-20-20 rule, you can notice an immediate improvement in your eye fatigue. So those are some simple things you can do. And then beyond that, there's, you know, to use screen filters. Like if you're really sensitive to light, if you're someone who doesn't like the blue light coming from your screen, don't get the blue blocking glasses because there's no proof that they work. So don't waste your money on blue blocking glasses or tints. Instead, use screen filter apps. Some of them are built in depending on what type of phone you have. You can adjust the settings on your phone, put it on night shift mode, or I forget the name of the other modes on other phones, but you can adjust the settings, or you can download a screen filter app to your phone to eliminate the blue light, particularly at night, so it's more comfortable for your eyes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Two more things.
Okay. Because I thought of a question, but go ahead.
Yeah. So the other thing is this is really important for kids. Like if you're listening and you're a parent or grandparent and you have young kids who maybe are having eye issues, they're wearing glasses at a young age, get them outside more, because we know that when kids spend at least 2 hours a day playing outdoors, that they have reduced rates of nearsightedness or myopia progression. So we can limit that myopia progression by simply getting them outdoors. Now, whether it's, you know, what is it about being outdoors for 2 hours a day? Is it not being on screen? Is it getting sunlight exposure? Is it being active? We don't know exactly what it is, but it's good for everything. So, you know, get out there, get some sunshine, even for adults, get some outdoor time. And then the last thing is nutrition. Going back to the nutrients I was talking about before, we know that if you have enough leafy greens in your diet and those nutrients, they're specific eye nutrients, they're called lutein and zeaxanthin. They're kind of hard to pronounce, hard to remember, but these are nutrients our eyes need and they can help fight against blue light and eye strain and eye fatigue. This has been scientifically proven. So don't waste your money on the blue blockers. Eat your nutrition and support your internal shields or blue blockers in your eyes by eating the right nutrients.
Wow. Thank you so very much for those tips. One of the things that happened to me recently was because I'm getting older and I was talking to my optometrist and she says, yeah, the older you get, you need a little bit more light and then you need contrast as well, because I was noticing I put something down, but I needed contrast. I couldn't really set black on black all the time. But at my job, I would always look at people's screens and say, why are you in that dark mode? Why are you? That just looks so strange to me. A few weeks ago, because I kept my office so bright, I was like, whoa, it's just a little too bright in here now. And I really had to change all of my screens to the dark mode. And it's working out so much better for me. So what is that blue light? And did that, you think, have anything to do with that? Or it was just everything was just too bright?
Yeah. So, you know, most people do have their contrast way up. And most people have it set so that they have black lettering on a white background. So that creates a lot of contrast. But if you're light sensitive, particularly because screens emit a lot of blue light is, it's part of the rainbow. You know, it's on one end of the rainbow. If you think about the seven colors of the rainbow, it's on the short end of the rainbow. And it can get into the back of our eyes and it can cause eye strain and fatigue. And so, and blue light comes, you know, it's all around us. It comes from the sun, but it particularly comes from devices, any type of device, whether it's your phone, your computer, your tablet, even a television will emit blue light. And it helps to, well, it doesn't help, but it helps to regulate our circadian rhythm. So our brains are kind of tuned into blue light. So we know kind of when the sun is rising, we know when the sun is setting, we know kind of when it's time to go to sleep. So if you're exposed to screens all day long, particularly in the evening or at nighttime after the sun is set, it may be more difficult to fall asleep and stay asleep because your circadian rhythm is thrown off by all this artificial blue light. But you know, what you mentioned, Mr. Speaker, is like changing the contrast. It's really important. If you're like really feeling a lot of fatigue, eye strain and fatigue, if you're light sensitive, definitely play around with your settings on your device. And I love that, you know, like switching the contrast. So flipping, inverting it. So it's white lettering on a black background. It's much gentler on the eyes and it actually has really good contrast. So it's easier to see like that.
Thank you so very much. Time is getting away. And if you don't mind, I have just a couple more questions because I love I've been wearing glasses all my life. And, you know, I was like, I wish I could just, you know, go without glasses. I even wear contacts. But the downside is I still have to wear readers with my contacts. And so next year I'm going to actually try, I guess, the bifocal contacts and see how those actually work. Two things I want to get a little bit more information on. One is glaucoma. What is it and what does it affect? Because, and I'll just, I'm very open. I haven't been diagnosed with glaucoma, but I have what they said, high ocular pressure. So I'm on lantanoprost eye drops.
Lantanoprost.
Yep. Every night I put in a drop and my pressure had gotten up one time around the mid 20s. But now it's down to around 12 or so. So is there a difference between high ocular pressure and glaucoma?
I'm so glad you asked because it's a really common question a lot of people have is what is glaucoma and is my pressure high? Like what's normal pressure? So glaucoma, and I'll pull out my handy dandy eye model again, is a condition that damages the optic nerve. Here's the optic nerve right here. And what happens is the nerve gets damaged and people may lose their peripheral vision, their side vision. And many people in the earliest stages of glaucoma, because this happens very slowly over years and decades, they don't know that this is happening because it's happening so, so slowly. But the nerve gets progressively damaged. And in a lot of cases, not all cases, but in the majority of cases, the optic nerve damage is associated with high pressure in the eye. Now, we talked about brain pressure before when we were talking about that IIH condition. We talked about blood pressure, but this is eye pressure. We actually can measure the eye pressure. It's the pressure inside the eyeball, you know, when it's whole. It's what the inside pressure of the eyeball that helps to keep the shape of the eye. So normal eye pressure is, and I'm going to say this with a little bit of a grain of salt, normal eye pressure is between 10 and 21 millimeters of mercury. However, those numbers come from studies that were done in very specific populations, in white males. So it may not apply to you, that normal range of 10 to 21, meaning that your eye pressure may be slightly higher. It may be, let's say, instead of 21, let's say your pressure is 24, and that may be normal for you. It doesn't mean you have glaucoma. It's simply called ocular hypertension. It's only glaucoma if the nerve has damage in the back of the eye. And the most important test for glaucoma is not only the eye pressure, it's something that we call the visual field test. Have you ever had one of these?
I do not like that test. Why do they give you white dots on a white background? I never understood that.
Yes, it can be torture for some people. It's a tedious test. It takes a while. But what it does is it measures, it tests your peripheral vision, and it can detect glaucoma because it can detect if you've lost like a little bit of side vision that, again, you may not even know it because it's happening so slowly. Your brain has gotten used to it. You've gotten used to it. But the visual field test will pick it up. And so, again, going back to your question, if you have, you know, slightly high eye pressure than normal, again, that normal is a specific demographic, then it may be normal for you. But the only way to know is to do a visual field test. And there's some other tests as well that your eye doctor can do, some scans of the nerve in the back of the eye and photographs and some measurements of the cornea to tell whether that pressure that you have, you know, whatever the pressure is, let's say it's 24, 25. I've even seen people up to 27, 28, and it's normal for them. And so they don't necessarily need treatment. But if your eye doctor thinks that, okay, this individual is at risk for damage to the nerve, maybe there's a family history of glaucoma, maybe there's something else going on with the nerve, maybe if you have other risk factors, for example, high myopia is a risk factor for glaucoma. So it could be that because, Mr. Speaker, because you have high myopia, you're nearsighted, your eye doctor is being a little bit more cautious and treating you earlier than he or she would for a person who didn't have high myopia. That could be that. But drops work. They're the first line of treatment. But I'm a big fan of kind of bringing things together. So not just medications and surgery and lasers, but also nutrition and lifestyle. So we have a whole section on the iHealth Summit. I invite you as well to join, Mr. Speaker, on glaucoma. So I have a wonderful speaker, an old friend of mine who's a really very experienced glaucoma specialist, talking about what is glaucoma, what are things people can do from a lifestyle standpoint, from a nutritional standpoint, to help to manage glaucoma. And in my practice, I also use some supplements for glaucoma as well to lower the eye pressure. And there's been some studies to show that certain types of supplements can lower the eye pressure by about 3 points, which you may not think that 3 points is a lot, but in a lot of the glaucoma research that's been done, 3 points can make all the difference. So for example, if you go from a pressure of 21 down to 18, that can make a big difference in whether your optic nerve is at risk or not for damage.
Most definitely. And I get checked every about 6 months or so. And, you know, I don't like it when they put on the big bright, I call it the coal miner's light, and take the big crystal ball.
We put our big headset on and everything. It's bright.
Ball in it. Yeah. And it's like,
we're looking at the retina. Mm-hmm.
I've seen that. But so, you know, I can relate to a lot of this. And that's why I was really looking forward to today's conversation, because earlier on in my life, my retina was detaching and I had laser surgery. So, you know, things are going, you know, very well. So I'm so glad I'm having this conversation. I want to go ahead.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear that. So we actually have another speaker on the summit, Dr. Markin. He's a retina doctor. He talks about flashes and floaters and retinal detachments and retinal tears and what you should do about them. He's featured on day 6 of the summit, if anyone's interested. And on day 3 is our glaucoma doctor. So on different days, again, we have different themes, different talks. So you can see our agenda online. You can see what days or which speakers, which themes and topics, and then pick and choose what you'd like to listen to.
Most definitely. If you can, please, I highly recommend that you attend this free online event. Information can be found at the iHealthSummit.com, the iHealthSummit.com. And I mean, there are speakers out of this world. And I'm definitely going to tune in, because I've dealt with migraines and, you know, the ocular pressure and all the likes. And I want to keep seeing until the Lord calls me home. One last question, and then I'm going to give you the last word to talk about anything that you want to talk about, and especially how they can get a copy of your books. On television, I, if I'm not mistaken, I've heard the term wet AMD, something like that. What is AMD, and is it avoidable, or is it one of those things that you just will have to deal with when you get older?
Yeah, I know. I turn on the TV. I don't watch that much TV, but when I do, the news, I see all these ads now for eye issues. And one of the things is all these new drugs that have been FDA approved for wet AMD or now even dry AMD, something that we call geographic atrophy or GA. These are types of macular degeneration, and AMD stands for age-related macular degeneration. And it's something that happens, as its name implies, when people get older. So typically, people in their 50s are not so much at risk. 60s, still not so much at risk. But once you get into your mid-70s, 80s, 90s, the risk goes up. And it is a problem in the back of the eye, in the retina, when where there are waste deposits that form. And those waste deposits, they form actually in that center part of the retina, this yellow area right here, which is responsible for our 20/20 vision. And that's called the macula. And so these deposits form, they cause inflammation, they cause bleeding. And when there's bleeding in the back of the eye and there's macular degeneration, we call that wet AMD. But there's also dry AMD. And there's a progression. So it's not that you immediately develop wet AMD and you lose your vision. It's something slowly that happens. And there, the good news is because it happens slowly, there's a lot of time to intervene. There's a lot we can do from a nutrition standpoint, from a lifestyle standpoint, without having to need those types of medications or drugs that are actually injected into the eye. So I'm a really big proponent of prevention. And if you haven't been able to tell by now, prevention, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And this topic we talk about during the Eye Health Summit, also on day two of the Eye Health Summit, we have a great speaker, one of my colleagues here in New York, Dr. Avnish Deobhakta. He's so articulate. He makes some wonderful analogies to try to explain macular degeneration. So definitely, if you have it, or if you know somebody who does and you want to learn more, or maybe you have a parent or family member with it, you want to learn more, please tune in for that talk because it's really eye-opening, quote unquote, eye-opening. Pun intended.
Pun intended. Excellent. Thank you so very much. And so, with everything that you have going on, I'm going to give you the last word today. Is there anything in particular you'd like us to know? I know what you're talking about your health summit, but when it comes to the eyes, and I know you are an advocate of prevention, is there anything else that you'd like to share with the listening audience on today?
I would. And first of all, I want to thank you so much, Mr. Speaker, for allowing me to share some of my passions with your audience. I really, this is what I love to do is to educate if you haven't been able to tell yet. But the one thing I want to share is, you mentioned earlier, Mr. Speaker, that you went to see your optometrist. You go see your optometrist every 6 months to get checked for glaucoma. Eye care and eye exams should be a regular part of your health screenings. So most people know that, okay, I need to go see my primary care doctor once a year. I need to get my labs done once a year. I need to get a colonoscopy every 5 years. If you're a woman, I need to get a mammogram every year. If you go see your dentist twice a year, but how often do you go see the eye doctor? And many people think that, oh, if I don't have an eye problem, I don't need to go see the eye doctor. My vision's 20/20. It's perfect. Why do I need to go see the eye doctor? Well, we all should be getting annual eye exams after the age of 40. That's my last message is go see your eye doctor once a year after the age of 40, because there's a lot that could be going on that you have no idea about. Because in the earliest stages of many of these things, whether it's cataract or glaucoma or macular degeneration, people don't know they have it unless they go get checked. So please go get checked so then you can do something about it. That's my last message.
All right. Tell us about your books. How can they get copies of your book, Dr. Rani?
Sure. Thank you again for sharing these. So my books are available on Amazon. They're available both in print and in Kindle. They're very colorful, and hopefully, they're a feast for your eyes because there's lots of foods in there that are kind of mouth-watering when you look at the pictures. So hopefully, I'll inspire some people to start creating things in the kitchen that are going to support their eye health as well.
All right. And I'm going to get ready to close out today because I'd really love to have you back. And I will have to talk with Pitch Publicity to see if we can bring you back because I'd like to touch on things like the migraines, color blindness, yes. and some other issues that, you know, time just won't permit tonight. But I think they're very interesting topics and they will help the listening audience. And so, you know, and to take care of our eyes, even when you go to get your glasses, they say, do you want all this UV stuff on your glasses? What does it really mean? So there's just so much that I'd like to cover.
There is a lot. And that's why we have the summit, because we have so many topics we're covering. But I would love to come back and talk about one of my other favorites. I love nutrition and prevention, but migraine is another one of my favorites to talk about. Oh. So I'd love to come back and talk about that.
All right. I think I'm going to have to contact Liz and see if she can look at scheduling you once again after, you know, the summit and everything. And so, Dr. Ronnie, I just want to say it has truly been a pleasure having you here on the show. And you know, when I was on radio, you were there. Now I'm on the podcast, you're here. And I just want you to continue to do great things, because, you know, I want everyone to be able to see for their entire life. Because, you know, can't see, there's a lot that you miss out on. Once again, I want to say thank you.
And for my listeners, thank you. Thank you. It was an honor to be here with you. Thank you. And I loved our conversation. Thank you.
I really enjoyed it. And so for my listening audience, remember, you can visit me on the website at vincenttedwards.com or check out my online community at vincentondemand.com. You know, you can find a lot of things to help you pivot into your purpose with power and precision. And like I always say, you know, life, it's all about purpose. Are you living yours? And I know Dr. Ronnie, she's living hers, because she loves teaching and she's teaching about the eyes. And so, you know, it's all about purpose. Are you living your purpose? Remember, in all that you do, be magnificent. And until next time, be good, be blessed, but most of all, be a blessing to someone.